Ooh, welcome to the Gambling Gauchos. I'm Rob Bro. He's Money Mainville. Kyle, not with us tonight. He is actually got a starring role in his church's production of an Easter play. He is Doubting Thomas tonight at the play. His only lines are nuh-uh. So hopefully he delivers those crisply and on cue. Do you ever do any acting, Money? Do you ever do any theater productions?
I don't think I was ever in a play. I think I was in a Christmas nativity scene at my church when I was real young.
Yeah.
But that was about the extent that I went with that fine art.
I have an eclectic acting history in the church and one-act play. My starring roles, I was Bob the Tomato 1 year for LTC, so good. If you're familiar, or a red t-shirt. I was already around. Let's see. I think I actually had a shirt with Bob's face on it. I think is what it was. The whole tomato. I was Mr. Beaver in a production of Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, one-act play. It was the worst one-act play ever put on in the history of one-act plays. It was, we did it the same year the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe came out, like, on the big screen. So, our very limited budget versus, you know, the Hollywood movie was a sight to behold. I was Mr. Beaver in that. I was a duet acting state champion. Did the history of television. So I've acted around. Nothing big. Nothing like the Doubting Thomas lead role in a church play. Certainly at the ripe age of 31, I believe. So Kyle's got his beat there. All right. Lots of basketball happening this weekend. NC State is still playing. I don't know how. Duke had a gift of a run to the Elite Eight. Now you might say, but they played Houston. Jamal Shedd going down, popping his ankle. If you reseeded the tournament without Jamal Shedd, Houston is not a one seed. So you go through and then they just lose like bad to NC State. I think NC State, for all intents and purposes, has been a bad matchup for everyone they've played. And I don't know that Purdue is any different. I think they might also be a bad matchup for Purdue. Now, we'll see how they call the game next weekend. But, man, NC State, the Final Four. On one hand, it makes me, you know, happy for NC State. I think in sports you can kind of say you lost to the team that went to the Final Four and get the edge off a little bit. But also, it's like if you beat them, you'd be in the Final Four. So, I don't know. That hurts a little bit. Did anything else surprise you in the rest of the tournament? Illinois over Iowa State. UConn, a 30-point run against Illinois. I mean, are we in an absolute freight train to UConn-Purdue, or is it going to be different?
Yeah, I really do think a big part of it comes down to how they call that game with Burns and Edie down low. Because like you're mentioning, they're a bad matchup for a lot of people. And it's really surprising to see. Because honestly, on paper, I still feel kind of the same way that I did when I was scouting them for the Tech game. Like, they do not statistically stand out in any category. Like, the one thing they do well is they don't turn the ball over. But there's also the eye test in sports, right? There's also moments where talent trumps the results that you've produced throughout the season. And there's also a metric that's nearly impossible to quantify, and that's momentum. And that team has more of it than anybody in the country right now. They are the hottest team in the country. Kevin Keats was probably going to be without a job before the ACC tournament. wins the ACC tournament, gets an automatic 2-year extension that's baked into his contract. Now he's in the Final Four. Like, this is one of the best stories in sports. I hate to say it because they beat Tech, and that obviously leaves a sour taste in your mouth, but they are really fun to watch. And I think part of what makes them so good is they have a really good guard in DJ Horn, who's just built like a March player, scores off the dribble, can create for his teammates. And then obviously you have DJ Burns, who's just a mismatch for pretty much anybody who's lined up against him. And so really interested to see how they call his matchup with Edie.
And what's even crazier about this run, yes, DJ Horn's been pretty consistent throughout the run, but Burns has, I mean, arguably been hit or miss. You had, McConnell out of nowhere hit a dagger three. Probably not out of nowhere. Out of nowhere for me because I didn't watch NC State all year. But it's been the whole team. I mean, the whole team has contributed. It's not a Cinderella, you know, Davidson run where Steph Curry was going crazy. It's not a Cinderella, who was it? Butler with Gordon Hayward? Who was Gordon Hayward? Butler?
I believe so, yeah.
It's crazy. And I saw a graphic. I should have saved the graphic. But it was, you know, players who started on the team that are there now. And I don't believe anyone started at NC State that's in the starting five. So
that's the other thing, too. They have, like, so many players on their roster have played over 100 college basketball games. And that is something that wins you a lot of games this time of year. So when you have a lot of guys who have been around, who know the game, who have been in these situations and can meet the task, can meet the momentum, can meet the expectations of here's how you're going to have to play to be able to advance in this tournament. And I think outside of Burns and Horn, just really good role players who are doing what they're asked. Like, you've got Morcell, who I think is an incredible on-ball defender. He really stood out to me when I was watching tape. Middlebrooks obviously kind of helping alleviate some of that front court pressure and depth that they've got. But man, it's a fun team to watch. I'll admit it. I've really enjoyed watching them throughout this tournament, except for the first weekend.
Yeah, that was certainly put a damper on it. But I do think the rest of it's been exciting. I don't know if I'm all in on NC State to the Final Four. Obviously, in the Final Four, ready for the national championship game, but certainly of the four teams there, I don't want Purdue. I don't want Purdue and UConn, 2-1 seeds. You know, on the other side, Alabama punching their first ever ticket to the Final Four. They beat North Carolina and Clemson over the weekend. Clemson's, you know, fairy dust just kind of ran out there at the end. But Alabama made a bunch of shots. And speaking of daggers, they made a couple of daggers that just put Clemson in the dirt. If anybody can keep up with UConn, I guess it's Alabama over there. But I thought Illinois was going to be able to do that. And they didn't, especially in the second half.
I haven't seen any lines, but I imagine the total for that UConn-Alabama game will be 170. Like, that game is going to be very, very high offense, a lot of possessions, a lot of shots. Because I think that's the kind of game that Alabama will play you into. And if they can go shot for shot.
UConn's minus 11.5. The total is 161.5.
Oh, I'm taking that over.
And just for what it's worth, Purdue, NC State, Purdue minus 9.5, 146.5 is the total. I would be fairly confident laying 11.5 for UConn, but I think I would take 9.5 plus 9.5 for NC State. I don't know. I've been so bad picking games, so I'll probably stay away from it. But Rodney says, win it all, NC State. Of the four, I think NC State would be the, I don't know, least offensive. I don't know exactly how to say it, but.
Definitely my pick. Yeah.
You don't want a back-to-back in college basketball. You like the parity. You don't really want an SEC team. Purdue, you know, the story of Matt Painter with all of his trials and tribulations in the NCAA tournament and, you know, being at Purdue for so long, if Zach Edey was at all likable, if Matt Painter was at all likable, that'd be a really good story. But neither of them are, in my opinion. Neither of them. So, I'm all in on NC State at this point.
I think that's an interesting narrative, too, is there's been a lot of talk from national college basketball guys, like, we're watching a generational player in Zach Edey, and all anybody does is hate on him, say he's not good. I'm kind of the mindset that, like, yeah, he is certainly elite and what he does and what he offers. But there is also a very fair opinion to have that the way that the game is called against him and on him on both sides of the floor makes it really easy to want to root against them.
Yeah. And him tying the Pistol Pete Maravich free throw record. It's like, okay. I mean, I didn't watch a lot of Pistol Pete. I was not alive when Pistol Pete was playing at LSU. I watched the hell out of the Pistol Pete Maravich story that was a family feature movie back in the day on VHS. Watched it a lot. He would dribble and then catch the ball behind his back. Great movie, if you can find it. But it just... Yeah, I mean, it just feels like they're not gifting it to him. He's earning the foul, but he knows what it takes to get the foul, and he does it well. He knows what the refs are looking for, and he plays the game in that way. All right, so that's the final four. Good for them. Texas Tech is out. George, on the YouTube comments, brings us to this. He says NC State does have three bigs, yes, and all three of them have been pivotal on the run. Jara had like 15 rebounds the other day. I think he had 11 points and 15 boards or something. Obviously, DJ Burns has done what he's done. Middlebrooks in the first game did what he did against Texas Tech. NC State does have three bigs, which if we keep Yalaho. Speaking of Texas Tech, and considering a big, we have to get at least two more guys to be competitive going forward. Robert Jennings has entered the portal. That was on Saturday afternoon. Saturday night, Pop Isaacs enters the portal. He is already back in Vegas, I believe, according to his father on Twitter, if you follow that kind of thing. The initial reaction. Give me your thoughts. First, your thoughts, and then we'll talk about the reaction to the actual portal moves. So give me your thoughts on Jennings in the portal and Pop on the portal, and then we'll kind of talk about what everyone else was saying about it.
Yeah, let's start with Jennings, because this is kind of the easier one to break down and to talk about. It's a little bit more black and white, at least in my eyes. I was pretty critical of Robert Jennings at the beginning of the season. He was still very raw, still making a lot of mistakes on both ends of the floor, just whether that was missing bunnies or falling asleep on a defensive assignment, not having good positioning down low. He had a rough start to the year. Warren Washington goes down. He gets more minutes. He slides into the starting lineup. And I thought he really started to come on down the stretch, started to clean up some of those mental mistakes, started to play a little bit better defense. I think we saw some flashes of that in that opening round against NC State. First couple of minutes of that game, I thought he played really well. I think with Robert Jennings, it comes down to this. You saw some moments, you saw some flashes, but this is the end of year two. Is this a guy that you want to commit to utilizing a roster spot on, saying, hey, we're going to bank on the fact that if we lose our starting center, who I imagine will be some guy who's in the portal or will soon be in the portal, that we feel comfortable giving you 25 minutes a night in this kind of caliber of a rotation? And my mindset is, I certainly don't think that was the case. And the way that Robert Jennings developed was impressive. I think he started to show some good things. Do I think his role at Texas Tech could ever be projected beyond 20 minutes a night off the bench? I don't think so. I don't think he's a bad player. I think he's still raw, especially for a two-year player. And I just don't know if he's the kind of big that you want to start in this conference, especially given, I mean, if we just look at his size, his stature, his build, I just don't think that was really the commitment you were willing to make. And so I imagine the conversation was something along the lines of, hey, this is going to look like 20 minutes a night at most next season. If you want to go find a starting job somewhere at a mid-major level or even somewhere else in the Power Six that, you know, it is going to be willing to play a little bit smaller, you're more than welcome to go do that. And so I certainly think he would have been a valuable piece next season. I don't want to undermine that. Minutes are always a very, very good thing to have available to you. Experience is always a good thing to have available to you. But I mean this in the best way possible. I do think there's an opportunity to upgrade and to get a little bit better and to get a little bit more experienced, a little bit more refined, a little bit more developed. And I feel like that's kind of what this move is implying to me.
Yeah, if Robert Jennings at 6'7" was Mark Vidal, you think about the Baylor run with Mark Vidal, who was, you know, a similar build, but was averaging, I don't know, 6 and 10 in his early years. If that's what Robert Jennings was, if Robert Jennings had a mid-range game and could stretch out and hit a couple threes and could play the four, I think you absolutely have the conversation of, yeah, your role will expand next year. But if you just look at what he did this year, and this is wild speculation on my part, but you go into that exit meeting, which teams have, and the coach running the exit meeting says, Robert, great name, by the way. You're going to be the seventh man next year, hopefully on this roster, and we're going to bring in two centers, and you're going to compete for the backup center role, and there's not much growth to the rest of the field for you. This is positionless basketball, but you don't do things well enough to play the four or the three at your size. We'd like to have you back, but that's the role. That's the cap. And if you have that hard conversation with somebody and they say, okay, I'm going to try to go to a mid-major. I'm going to try to go to Buffalo and play above that. Good for him. Good for him. And in the same respect, I think you have tough conversations with Pop Isaacs and say, this is the role we envision for next year. You'll be playing off ball. You're not going to be ball dominant because you were not efficient enough this year to be ball dominant. You certainly flashed at the first of Big 12 play, but that was when Joe Toussaint was running the point and you looked more comfortable in that role. If that's not what you want to do, go find a place to do what you want to do. Is that how you also see Pop Isaacs? You said it was a lot more cut and dry, I think, for Robert Jennings. And I do think there is a lot more gray area with Pop Isaacs because of his flashes, because of his 30-point game against A&M in the scrimmage, because of his, you know, first seven games of Big 12 play where he's averaging 20 points a game and facilitating. So I don't know. I what other gray area do you say Pop Isaacs might have in that kind of exit meeting?
Yeah, well, I really do think it comes down to efficiency and role. Like, he was your guy this year. What you did this year depended on him. Just look at the numbers. He took 161 more shots than anyone else on the roster. That is a clear indicator that he is the engine. And I think the results could be cause for concern as to say, hey, we tried this and you won us some games. Like, I want to make that very clear. There were games that Pop Isaacs won you because of his shot making ability, because of the moments when he got hot, because of the moments when he was on. But at other times, the shot volume was not what we wanted it to be. The efficiency was too low. And the contribution of what you do outside of shooting the ball was not necessarily enough for us to commit to, hey, even if this isn't efficient, we can still have you doing this next season because you contribute in these other areas. He is who he is. Like, he is a score first, shoot first guard. And there are programs that need a guy like that, who are willing to go all in on a guy like that. But I think Tech did this season, and the results speak for themselves. And so I just want to say a couple of numbers, because I think context is important. This is not meant to be a knock on him, but just some context, because I feel like his production and his volume this year is lost on a lot of people. He took the eighth most shots in a season by a Texas Tech player since 1992. The only guys who have had seasons where they took more shots since 1992.
Can I guess?
You want to guess? Yeah. There is a Culver is one of them. There are three others.
Mac McClung
is not up there.
Jamias Ramsey?
Mm-mm.
Wow. Keenan Evans?
Mm-mm.
Okay. I'm out.
Missing an easy one. Andre
Jackson. Andre Emmett.
Jarius Jackson is one. Andre Emmett is one. And then Corey Carr is the other.
Corey
Carr. And like, all those guys are very, yeah, very highly thought of Texas Tech players that were keystone players for this program. I'm not saying Pop Isaacs wasn't, but was he that caliber of a player? I think it's fair to say no. And if you look around the Big 12, this season, he was second among Big 12 players in field goals attempted per season. If you go on the play index, you sort Big 12 players by field goals attempted, he is second. Can you guess what the next player is ranked in that field goals attempted category who had a lower field goal percentage this season?
Say that one more time.
So, sorted by field goals attempted, which guy is next that had a lower field goal percentage? Where would you guess they're at in terms of that total field goals attempted this season?
Oh, 35th.
It's 48.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. And it was a role player at Oklahoma State.
Wow. 48th. Wow. And he was second?
And he was second at 34.9% from the field. And I think it's fair to look at that and say, this is perhaps hurting us more than it was helping us, because that is a huge gap.
Yeah. He also, you know, as a freshman, came in with a hip injury, I believe. Is that true?
Yes, and had surgery on it.
And then, you know, kind of didn't play, didn't practice, and then just kind of showed up for games and was what he was as a freshman. And now you find out, allegedly, after his sophomore season, he's also having some kind of hip surgery. I think that plays into it. There's a question here. Are we sure that Pop wasn't processed? I think processed is so cut and dry that you go into the exit meeting, there's not much of a conversation, and they say, thanks for coming out. You're not coming back. I don't think it was a closed. I don't think they said, hey, we appreciate what you did, and we'll help you find somewhere else. I think it was, if you want to come back in this role, we would like for you to play this role. If you don't want to play this role, we'll help you find somewhere else. And I think that's the same thing can be said about Robert Jennings. And I have, you know, you can say that, right, as somebody not inside the program, and I can make that leap of faith there. Speaking of leaps of faith, I think, you know, on Easter Sunday, Grant McCaslin puts out a video that, to me, reading between the lines, and you can go find this on Coach McCaslin's own Twitter feed. It's a video he put out where he says, basically, in my opinion, reading between the lines, that they were, quote unquote, processed. That seems like a harsh word, but I mean, I do think that there was that level of thing to it. I think they both could have come back, but I think they both were given a role that they didn't want to do and are looking elsewhere. And I think that's part of college basketball now. And the beauty of it is they can leave for free and go play immediately elsewhere for free. And it doesn't really hurt this program. And hopefully it helps the next program. And whoever's leaving a program out there comes to Texas Tech and helps this program. I think that's, you know, that's the good side of the transfer portal. There are ugly sides. There are bad sides to the transfer portal. I think you can give horror stories and examples of things that don't work out. But Pop Isaacs and Robert Jennings seem like opportunities to go excel at other programs. Just like Darian Williams came here and excelled at a new program up a level. I think there are win-win situations out there. And do you wish Pop Isaac shot 36% from three instead of 28% from three? Yeah, and he's probably back no question if he did that. But he didn't. So I do think it was a mutual decision probably, not a one-sided decision, but it is what it is at this point, right?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that McCaslin commented on it. Like, he didn't use Pop's name, which is smart, but very much alluding to that situation, because I know we're going to talk about reactions, and I think this definitely plays a big part into it. The conversation last night, I saw two kind of umbrellas of opinions. One was that this guy sucks and he was told to kick rocks. Yeah. The other was this guy scored 15 points per game. We're losing him to the portal. Our program is on fire. Yeah. How is the program going to look like going forward? And both of those are so wrong. Like, yeah, they just are. And so obviously he's a smart guy, McCaslin. A well-spoken guy, and I genuinely do believe a good guy. And so he's not going to come out there and say either one of those things of, hey, we asked him to leave, or hey, he's leaving, we're going to be fine. But I do think it comes down to he is who he is. Like, you have said that multiple times throughout the season. I have said that multiple times throughout the season. He is who he is. And sometimes you have to make a decision based on that you hope will benefit your program down the line. And I said this in a tweet, and maybe it wasn't fair to give myself 150 characters to really expound on this. Do I think he's replaceable? I do. Do I think he's upgradable? I do. And here's the reason why. Does that upgrade necessarily look like more points per game? Not necessarily. Does it look like the same amount of usage rate? Not necessarily. But do you feel like you can go into the portal, get a guy who's a little bit more efficient, initiates your offense a little bit more, is a plus defender, looks really confident in the pick and roll? Yeah, I think so. And I think that's kind of the middle area that I've tucked myself into. I don't think he sucks, but I also don't think that he's this elite all-American potential player that we need to be having a panic attack about him leaving. And I also think this is kind of a smart move on his part, because from the outside looking in, I think a lot of people close to this program have a lot of opinions, but from the outside looking in, it, even with this statement, it's going to be mentioned on so many ESPN broadcasts next year. Lost their top scorer in Pop Isaacs to the transfer portal. He's now at wherever he ends up. How are they going to replace this? I think it's kind of smart to get ahead of some of that and say, hey, we're wishing him the best on wherever he goes. And we greatly appreciate his contributions to the program and the fact that he played so hard throughout the season, which I think he did. Like, he was clearly dealing with some stuff, not only on the court with his body, but off the court, a lot of noise, obviously the health of his father, like, and he showed up every night, played Big 12 basketball. It's not an easy thing to do.
And to that end, you know, quite frankly, the civil case is not going to go away this summer. Probably. I mean, I think that extends into next season. I don't know how long. It could be dropped tomorrow. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. But it certainly feels like that is another part of the Pop Isaacs story that has to be mentioned. Interesting question here from George. Do you think the refs not calling charges this year like in the past? Obvious emphasis on the block call this year. Versus them not calling them and letting big guys run over smaller guys in the post had an effect on what type of player is needed. Yeah, maybe, but I still think that you have to have a guard in Big 12 play that can get to the rim. And I think a healthy Pop Isaacs could do that. But again, two straight seasons, you have stretches where he's unhealthy and it seems like the same injury. So I don't know. I also, to go back to your point of him being replaceable, you also replaced Joe Toussaint. So I'm not saying that you just have to replace Pop Isaacs with two people, but wouldn't you prefer to replace that production with two people instead of one? Like, you don't really want to go get a guy that's going to shoot 161 shots more than everyone else next year, unless it's Darian Williams, maybe. I mean, if that's the case and he's shooting a bunch of buckets in the paint and also shooting 48% from three or whatever he was this year, maybe that's the kind of guy that you can get behind in an efficient role. But I think you go get two guards to replace what Pop Isaacs did. And I do, again, funny that Tyler says this, he played hard every second. You know, as a freshman, the team was a rudderless ship with Mark Adams. There was zero leadership. And Pop Isaacs on the floor provided that leadership, in my opinion. And I think that team, as bad as it was, would have been way worse off if Pop Isaacs was not on the team. And I think he played incredibly tough and showed enormous grit to get through this season as well. I don't want to push Pop Isaacs out the door, but I'm also not begging for him to stay. I think that's where I've landed. I think that's what you're saying as well.
Yeah, and I want to touch on kind of one other reaction that I saw last night. Did a little Ask Me Anything last night, and this popped up as a comment. It wasn't a question, so I didn't answer it. And I also did not think I had enough characters. I wanted to save it for the pod. But this is from Luke Irwin. He just commented under I believe it was the post where I said, I think there's an opportunity to not only replace the guys that you've lost, but also potentially upgrade. He says, for all the people that believe we can replace this player and that player, I remind you that two of our players from 2022 were All-Americans this year. Keeping talent is preferable to being forced to add to it. And so I want to say I completely understand that line of thinking, completely get it. And I generally will almost always agree with that. But where this situation kind of starts to break down and where I think it's different is when you look at those two guys. TJ Shannon is one of the guys that's mentioned. He took 7.6 shots per game his last season at Tech. He took 14.4 this year at Illinois. Pop took 14.1 this year. TJ Shannon did not have the keys to this program when he was here. It was Bryson Williams' team his last year, and it almost seemed to be trending in the direction that if Kevin McCullough and TJ Shannon stayed, it was probably going to be McCullough's team just by way of the role that McCullough was pursuing. And so TJ Shannon went to a program that was willing to give him the keys, and he excelled. The other thing with Shannon that I think a lot of people forget, that last year at Tech, he was getting serious NBA draft interest. Like, he would not have been a lottery pick, but I'm telling you, there was very, very real talk of teams that were more than willing to say, hey, we're going to spend a second round draft pick on you if you're there. And he was raw, but you saw athleticism, great on-ball defense, really good offensive development from where he was a freshman. Like, I was thinking about this watching the Illinois games this past week. As a freshman at the USA, he would get, like, people would scream at him because he would have the ball on the perimeter and he had no desire to shoot that thing. He had no interest in it. I mean, watch his games from this season. It's a completely different player. And so I think that's where the differentiator is for Shannon. With McCullough, I think the first thing I'd say is he wasn't an AP All-American this year. He did make the NABC third team, I believe. But even he took 8.6 shots per game his last season at Tech. This year at Kansas, took 13.5. It's also generally going to help you produce better, whether that's scoring or passing, when you're playing alongside guys like Hunter Dickinson, DeJuan Harris, KJ Adams, Furphy. Like, when you're playing alongside that talent, it's really going to maximize what you're able to give. And so where I think that line of thinking, at least in my mind, and this is a great question, Luke, and a great point, not trying to diminish that, but where I see the differentiator here is this was kind of Pop Isaac's chance. Eighth most shots in a season by a Tech player in the last 20 years. This was his chance to say, you are our guy. Go show us what you can do. You can take as many shots as you want. No matter how many you miss, no matter what kind of streak you're on, you have the green go-ahead light. And it just did not play out into the production that I think you were willing to see. Now, do I think that he gets worse in his next stop? I don't know. I think a lot of what it's going to look like is where he goes. I honestly think he should go to a program like UNLV or somewhere that's going to say, dude, you are our guy. Like, go take every shot you want. You are our guy. We're putting everything on you. I personally don't think he would play his best basketball in a system like Kansas, where it's going to be much more rigid. He's going to have to share the ball a lot. And he's going to have to play more as an initiator than a scorer. I really think where he can play his best basketball, and if I were him, this is where I would be looking personally, is a place that's just going to let me go do what I know I can do, which is put up shots. So will he score more points per game next season? Maybe. Will he be more efficient next season wherever he is? Maybe. But I think from the Texas Tech perspective and the way I see it, this was as good a shot as any to be the engine, to be the guy, to be the primary initiator. And I don't think you saw your ceiling raise to the heights that you were hoping when that happened.
And to also pull those two names, they were coming off a Sweet 16 run. Terrence Shannon was a 6'6", 6'7" athletic freak. Kevin McCullough was one of, if not the most efficient defenders in the country on one of, if not the most efficient defense in the country that season. I mean, if Pop Isaacs leaves and shows up at a program with the credibility of Kansas or Illinois, I'll eat some words here. But I think that's apples and oranges. I don't think Pop Isaacs is that player. If Pop Isaacs was a 6'6 athletic freak that could intercept any pass like a safety on the perimeter and go tomahawk slam it, and you saw that kind of availability, and you also had a program in absolute shambles behind the scenes that nobody knew about, then yeah, I think you look at it and say, you lost two All-Americans, don't lose another one. But again, I think that's, and you said it really well, but I think quite simply, those three players are apples and oranges. I don't think they're the same players.
And I don't, again, like just to reiterate, I don't think those two guys had the same opportunity that Pop Isaacs was given this year.
No. And by all accounts, we're not going to be given that opportunity because of the system you were in. I mean, you were in a rigid defensive system and you weren't going to take a bunch of shots. And you saw how the next year went. Let's see. We kind of talked about it without talking about it. I did say we were going to talk about the reaction. You mentioned the dichotomy of it, that half the fan base was, you know, woe is me, we suck again, Pop Isaacs and Robert Jennings are leaving. The other half are, yeah, kick them to the curb, these guys suck. I think it's somewhere in the middle. I think one of my favorite phrases is, in the world of truth, there's, you know, two islands, and the truth is somewhere in between, in the middle of the ocean. I think you have to, you know, peg somewhere in the middle of the ocean of those two islands of thinking and say, this is what it was. And I think, you know, the fact that McCaslin gave a video statement, I think speaks a lot to it. I also saw a lot of people saying, you know, they're tired of trusting the process. I think that's an incredibly overused verbiage in sports. You had the Sixers absolutely run it into the ground and never complete the process, really. But, I mean, right now, you got to trust the process, right? I mean, there's not really another way to say it. You have to trust the process. I also saw some people, you know, livid that, you know, there's no high school recruiting coming in this season. Again, as much as it pains people to hear, and you might turn into year seven of Joel Embiid with no help after getting a bunch of veterans in that never really pan out, trust the process. I think you just have to trust Coach McCaslin and Coach Buffington to have a full offseason together. Now, Dave Smart also leaving to Pacific. That was mentioned in the video as well. But I just, with Darian Williams and Chance McMillan and Warren Washington and what those guys provided you this year, you have to trust. If you don't want to trust the process, trust the evaluation. Maybe that's a better way to put it.
I'm going to make a comparison here, and maybe it's a bad one. And I'm sure there's a lot of holes that you could poke in this. But this kind of feels similar to what Joey McGuire did this past offseason. You've taken the hand that you were dealt. You tried to maximize it. You tried to do the best you could with it. but now it's kind of time to do things your way. And that process moves a lot faster in college basketball because of how little spots you have, how little patience there is from players to get their playing time, to get their moments. And so I kind of feel like this is the opportunity to kind of wash your hands, say, hey, we did what we could. We appreciate the players that stuck around, played hard last season. Now we're going to kind of start doing things from point A. And I kind of think that's what's going to happen. And I would almost approach this more as like an index fund than a hype stock. Like, maybe this churn doesn't result in a higher win total next season. Maybe it doesn't. And maybe that's not what people want to hear, but maybe it doesn't. There's a very real possibility that that happens in my mind. But will you be better off the year after that, or even the year after next year? Yeah, I think so, because the guy you've got leading your program now has a proven track record of developing talent, getting his guys, evaluating players that are available, and then getting the most out of them. And so I kind of see both perspectives of like, this guy sucks, and I can understand why people think that. I don't. And I get the reaction of, this really stings. We're losing 15 points per game. I saw some takes that was like, man, we're not even going to make the CBI next year, which is just ridiculous in my mind. But I really do think the middle ground of, you got the hand that you were dealt, you inherited an absolutely dumpster fire of a situation. You did the best you could with it. Now it's kind of time to wipe the slate clean. There are things that you saw that you liked. Those guys are going to stay. They are going to be developed. I'm almost certain of it. They're going to get better. And where you feel like you need a clean start, there are going to be opportunities to bring in guys to kind of help lead that charge. And that does not have to be high school recruiting. It does not. In fact, I almost think it's wiser for it not to be. Go get a guy who's shown that he can play at a mid-major level, who knows he can play college basketball, who can do a number of different things. Get them to transfer up, develop them to being a Big 12 player, and have that guy for two seasons. But the hit rate on freshmen at this program has been so low. I'm not just saying like the staff will be the same. I don't think that's the case. But I think there is something to looking at the past few years and saying, I mean, Pop was probably the biggest hit in terms of freshmen. Jamias Ramsey, maybe.
Jamias Ramsey, yeah, would be the other one. Well, but since even, Jerry Culver.
Yeah, and since Culver, Culver, and even that. Like,
yeah.
And that's a guy that was in your backyard. Like, there's not going to be very many of those. And so I guess all of those way too many words is just to say, take a deep breath, no matter where you're at on the spectrum. And I don't necessarily think it's as much about trusting a process as it is, this program needs to be rebuilt in a lot of ways. It needs to be retooled in a lot of ways. And I think that's what's starting to happen.
Yeah, and I push back a little bit on some people that say this program was in the dumpster when Mark Adams left. Certainly, he left it in disarray. But he didn't burn the Womble down. He didn't burn the USA down. You still sold out four or five games in the USA and Big 12 play, which is the most you've sold out even in the Beard era. Everything's fine. And I think in sports, especially when you taste success, fine is not good enough anymore. But this is the second coach removed from the national championship. And in 15 seasons as a head coach across multiple levels, Grant McCaslin has failed to have a 20-win season once. Once. They were 18-10 and went to the NCAA tournament round of 32. They won an NCAA tournament game in the only season he didn't go at least 20 wins, and I believe they won the, what was it, the Conference USA tournament that year to make the dance. And then, is that the year they beat Purdue?
It is.
There you go. I mean, track record. This is not just saying, because of this season, we trust Grant McCasland. It's not just Darian Williams. This is a 15-year head coaching career of success. Trust the process. All right. Let's see. On Wednesday, Money Mainville, Tech Hoops Guy, and myself will be on the Patreon, patreon.com/gamblinggauchos. If you were in a car crash and ran away from it and maybe provided some catastrophic injury to yourself or to someone else, you could call Barnett Howard & Williams, Barnett Howard & Williams Law Firm, bhwlawfirm.com. They don't want you to be in that situation. They don't want you to call them with that situation. But if you were in the situation, you could reach out to them. They are double Texas Tech graduates. They love this basketball program. They want the best for it, and they want the best for you. So hit them up if you need them. Don't go, you know, commit a crime just to call Barnett Howard & Williams. But if you find yourself in the position of need, Barnett Howard & Williams are there for you, and they work cases all across Texas, family law, catastrophic injury, Title IX, you name it, they can do it. bhwlawfirm.com. Any final thoughts? Money, I told you we were going to do 30 minutes. We're 52 minutes of us right now, but I think we've had a good conversation. Do you have some names, or do you want to save that? Obviously, you have written a lot on patreon.com, patreon.com/gamblinggauchos, if you so choose to follow Money's writings there. Maybe some final thoughts just to wrap this up.
Yeah, let's save specific names for Wednesday. But I do think that I've been structuring kind of my off-season wish list in terms of archetypes, because I think that's more helpful. And also, like, massive hat tip to anybody that's trying to cover the transfer portal and, like, keep up with specific names. Yeah. Not my niche. No interest in it whatsoever. I don't have time for that, to be quite honest. But I do think those are kind of starting to shift for me a little bit. I think with the losses you've had, I still think you need an athletic big man, a starting caliber big man. That's priority number one. I'll be interested to see what happens with DJ Burns. No, not that one. The one out of Youngstown State. It's almost sounding like there may be more concern about that waiver, as Tech Hoop Guy mentioned on Wednesday. So we'll kind of see what happens with that recruitment. But I do think that there are plenty of other guys in the portal who could be your starting five next year, and I would feel really good about. I still feel pretty firm on that you need to bring in an efficient and an experienced lead guard. Honestly, for me, that's probably priority number one. I feel like a lot of people don't want to hear that because for some reason, the death grip that 7-footers have on college basketball fans, it is just unrelenting. But you need lead guards to play well in this conference and to play well in the NCAA tournament. And I think by the time we record our Wednesday episode, the only guard on the roster may be Chance McMillan. And he's probably more of a catch and shoot guy than I would quantify as a lead guard. So I think that's got to be priority number one. You've got to bring somebody in who can initiate the offense, score in transition, create their own shot. That's got to be where you're putting all your eggs in a basket for now. And then I was kind of insistent on a 3-and-D wing as kind of being the kind of player that you wanted to bring in. I think obviously if there's a player like this, the staff was going to look for them anyways. But I think kind of where I'm trending is you're going to be more focused on kind of a gadget wing player. Thank you, Adonis Arms, which is a bad comp because he was such a good player and so underrated. But just kind of in terms of playing style, like a guy who can create his own shot, can play good defense, can get to the basket, can pass the ball. I think that's going to kind of be the piece that you're looking for. If you can get, you know, one lead guard, a catch and shoot guy or a gadget wing, Darion Williams, and then two bigs, like, we're cooking. And I know there's a lot of holes there. I know that there's a lot of hoops to jump through to get there. But this is where this staff has the opportunity to get guys on campus, show them the facilities, talk to them about this fan base, talk to them about their vision of building a program, and really sell them on being a part of that and being a part of this process that we're talking about.
Somebody asks, unrelated, Rob, is that an Adams State hat? No, it's not. I do not know what this hat is, though. Adams State is green. This is some high school in the DFW from a certain sidewalk sale that happens every summer in the city of Lubbock. Speaking of wardrobes, I love the shirt, Money. It's very 90s-esque. Is that Tommy Hilfiger? Is that what shirt is that?
I think it's from Shein, which will probably get me canceled.
Hey, man, we're all fine here.
But yeah, it looked kind of Eastery.
I like it.
My girlfriend told me she wanted to take a picture with me today, but she hadn't decided what she was going to wear today. And so I kind of just figured, hey, if it's one of these like six colors, I'm probably in business. And it actually ended up being yellow.
Nice.
Kind of perfect with the frocket. So
there you go.
Appreciate the shirt, love.
I can dig it. I can dig it. Have you seen the movie, was it mid-90s? Look like you'd be an extra in that movie. It's kind of a skater culture movie from the mid-90s. Let's see.
Yeah, movie talk is washed on me, as you know. I did watch Dune this past week. Got sick. Watched the first Dune.
The first one? Okay.
The first one. So I'll watch the second one in probably about 6 months. Yeah. I enjoyed it. It was pretty good.
It was much better the second time I watched it. There's a lot of world building and stuff that was lost on me in the initial run. I really enjoyed it the second time I watched it months later. Also, I don't think was paying good enough attention the first time. You know, last offseason, we would give recommendations maybe on what to watch. We're in the offseason. I've got a what to watch and what not to watch. On Amazon Prime, leave Ricky Stenicki in the watch list. You don't need to watch it. It happened. It was a movie that was made. We can all move on. But to watch, there is a documentary on Garth Brooks building a bar in downtown Nashville. He calls it Lower Broad, which I guess is the lower part of Broadway. I don't think anyone else in the world calls it Lower Broad, but Garth Brooks. And him and Trisha Yearwood are building this bar, this monstrosity. It's like, you know, Jimmy Buffett, Margaritaville. But he earnestly talks about it in third person. As this, you know, run-of-the-mill underdog honky-tonk. It's three stories. It's got private catering venues. It's got a secret bar on the third floor. It's not an underrated run-of-the-mill honky-tonk. But if you like to people watch, Garth Brooks is fascinating. He is so out of touch. And has these incredible one-liners and stories. And he cries. Nothing wrong with a man crying. But he cries more than anyone else I know. He'll start talking about his dad. and he'll be talking about something completely unrelated in construction, right? And then he'll say, you know, my dad, he told me a story about the stripe. And in sports, there's a chalk line. In baseball, in football, it's a chalk line that you have to cross. And when you cross it, you're not just playing for yourself. You're part of a team. And you're not just playing for yourself. You're not just letting yourself down. You got to think about letting everyone else down.
That's like the most negative but profound thing. And he has moved to actual tears.
He's like a youth pastor on steroids, like doing the altar call at a summer camp, crying every time. It's incredible to watch. If you hate Garth Brooks, if you love Garth Brooks, if you want to know where the bodies are buried, go watch this documentary on Amazon Prime. It is hilarious. I think it's called Friends in Low Places. That's the bar name. But there's also another documentary somewhere out there on Garth Brooks coming back out on tour. It's the same thing. Him crying every 5 minutes, just giving these zinger one-liners. It's like his dad hated him and never wanted him to be successful, but he like takes all these profound things from what his dad said. It's incredible. I was very entertained.
I echo what Mike says about Shogun. Not a big, I don't watch a lot of TV. I'm terrible about just like rewatching shows that I've already watched at nauseam. Cause I just don't have a lot of time to like sit down and fully focus on TV. So I like to have something on that provides noise that will make me laugh. But I can still do other things with, but Shogun just like popped up in my watch list this past week.
Yeah.
Watched every single episode. It is incredible.
I've seen that one floating around. I need to take that one in.
Production is amazing. It's so good. The soundtrack is really good. The story building is really good. I think there's an English dubbed version of it, but I'm watching the original version, which is like 75% in Japanese. Oh man. It's a complete opposite of what I'm typically about on TV. Because I've got to like sit down and just like lock in, especially when it's not in English. Like I've just got to give it my full attention. Can't even be on the phone because I've got to read the subtitles.
Yeah.
But it is fantastic. So good.
There's, you know, I'm not an anime guy, but there's the conversation of, you know, subbed versus dubbed. Give me the subtitles all day long. I want the original. Go back to the Squid Games. It's like all in Korean. Yeah. Give me the actual portrayal, the actual actors. I'll read it and I can keep up with it. I'm a subtitle guy anyways. So, and yes, Tyler, Garth and Matthew McConaughey are two opposite sides of a coin. It's like Garth Brooks is evil Matthew McConaughey and in the best way possible. I am so fascinated by Garth Brooks. And Garth Brooks is maybe the only person more fascinated with Garth Brooks than I am. He is very fascinated with himself. And it's like watching, it's rubbernecking on a train wreck. It is. This Garth Brooks documentary. It's amazing. I can't speak highly enough about it. All right. I think that's all I have. We'll do a mailbag on Wednesday as well. I think we covered all our bases. Do you want to say it for once? You want to close this out?
Love y'all.